everyone. Welcome to episode number 9 of Thomas and the Bible. We're on Genesis chapter 35 today. Actually, just real quick, I want to start. I was going to say at the end of chapter 34, I went on rather a long rant about how they murdered a bunch of people for no reason, since God didn't even tell them to. Also, at the end, it said specifically, go to it here. It said Jacob was mad at his sons, but not because they just murdered a bunch of people. Here, listen to this. Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "Ye have troubled me to make me stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And I, being few in number, they shall gather themselves against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed, and I and my house." So he doesn't care, like, wait a minute, you just killed a bunch of people. You just murdered a bunch of innocent people for no reason. He doesn't care about that. No, he's not the least bit concerned about that. He's just mad that now he's going to have a bad reputation and people are going to come after him. So Jacob's kind of an asshole. Getting on to chapter 35. "And God said unto Jacob, Arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there, and make an altar unto God that appeared unto thee when thou fleddest from the face of Esau thy brother." So once again, Jacob needs a reason to leave, and miraculously, God tells him he should leave. So it's not the other way around, right? It's not, you know, Jacob leaves, so he makes up an excuse. No, God told him to leave. Okay, yeah. Then Jacob said, and he's always running away. It's always God's telling, yeah, whatever. "Then Jacob said unto his household and to all that were with him, Put away the strange gods that are among you, and be clean, and change your garments." What? Put away the strange gods? So even people who are directly talking to God have other gods that they're carrying around with them? What? That seems kind of weird. You know, there have been a few things they've said that it sort of sounds like there isn't just one God, like there's others. Every time God appears, he says the same thing. He says, "I am God. I am the one, the best God. I am the only God, the God," you know. And they always have these other gods with them, and they're worried about God being jealous. It just sounds a little weird. "And let us arise and go up to Bethel, and I will make there an altar unto God, who answered me in the day of my distress, and was with me in the way which I went. And they gave unto Jacob all the strange gods which were in their hand, and all their earrings which were in their ears, and Jacob hid them under the oak which was by Shechem," and who is now murdered. "And they journeyed, and the terror of God was upon the cities that were round about them, and they did not pursue after the sons of Jacob. So Jacob came to Luz, which is in the land of Canaan, that is, Bethel, he and all the people that were with him. And he built there an altar and called the place El Bethel, because there God appeared unto him when he fled from the face of his brother. And Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died, and she was buried beneath Bethel under an oak, and the name of it was called Allon Bethshuth. And God appeared unto Jacob again, and when he came out of Paddan Aram, and blessed him. And God said unto him, Thy name is Jacob, thy name shall not be called any more Jacob, but Israel shall be that name, shall be thy name. And he called his name Israel. He said, I got a good idea from a rent boy of mine. And God said unto him, I am God Almighty, be fruitful. There it is again, he's got to remind. I am God. Yeah, I know. You're the one in the sky with all the, you know, talking to me with a big voice. I know. I don't think there's somebody on a megaphone or something. Why do you keep reminding me? Again, I think he's insecure. I think there are other gods that he's jealous of. And he wants, maybe through some sort of God evolution, this God turned out to be the God that worked. Like, maybe they prayed to other gods and, you know, crap happened, but then they prayed to this one and something good happened, so they said, that must be the right one. I sort of think that might not be far from the truth, since they still were carrying other gods with them, apparently. Okay. Guy, I'm God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall be of thee, and kings shall come out of thy loins. And the land which I gave Abraham and Isaac, to thee I will give it, and to thy seed after thee will I give the land. And God went up from him in the place where he talked with him. And Jacob set up a pillar in the place where he talked with him, even a pillar of stone, and he poured a drink offering thereon, and poured oil thereon. God said, look, I don't need you to pour oil on rocks for me. I don't care. Stop doing it. And God called it. God never told him to do any of this. They just somehow do it. And Jacob called the name of the place where God spake with him Bethel. And they journeyed from Bethel, and there was but a little way to come to Ephrath, Zach-Ephrath. And Rachel travailed, and she had a hard labor. And it came to pass, when she was in hard labor, that the midwife said unto her, fear not, thou shalt have this son also. And it came to pass, as her soul was in departing, for she died, that she called his name Benoni, but his father called him Benjamin. And Rachel died, and was buried in the way to Ephrath, which is Bethlehem. And Jacob set a pillar upon her grave, that is the pillar of Rachel's grave unto this day. And Israel journeyed, and spread his tent beyond the Tower of Eder. And it came to pass, when Israel dwelt in that land, that Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine, and Israel heard it. Now the sons of Jacob were 12. So I guess he just cast away Bilhah, who slept with his father's concubine. Sort of a weird detail. He didn't murder Bilhah and all his family, but like they did with the other people who slept together. Again, God hasn't said, thou shalt not sleep with thy father's concubine. He hasn't said anything but thou shalt not kill, essentially. The sons of Leah, Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, and Simeon, and Levi, and Judah, and Issachar, and Zebulun. It's just recounting the sons. The sons of Rachel, Joseph, and Benjamin. He decided to call him Benjamin, even though Rachel, as she was dying, called him Benoni. Joseph was like, oh, that's cute, hon. Anyway, now that you're dead, Benjamin. It'll be Benjamin. And the sons of Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, Dan and Naphtali. And the sons of Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, Gad, and Asher. These are the sons of Jacob, which were born to him in Paddan Aram. And it came to pass, and Jacob came unto Isaac, his father, unto Mamre, unto the city of Arba, which is Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac sojourned. And the days of Isaac were 104 years, and Isaac gave up the ghost and died, and was gathered unto his people, being old and full of days. His sons Esau and Jacob buried him. I just blew through that chapter. It's a pretty boring one. Pretty much Jacob flees, and then Rachel's handmaiden died. Rachel's handmaiden died, I believe. Whatever, who cares? And then Rachel died. She had another son. And really, that's about it. And somebody named Reuben slept with Bilhah, his father's concubine. I don't really know what that's about. There was one quick verse, and then that was the end of it. So on to chapter 36. Well, this one isn't quite fully all begatting, but it's mainly family line and he begat, she begat, they begat, we begat, Nosotros begat, Vominos. So there's not going to be a whole lot of discussion here. Pretty disappointing so far in these chapters. They're hit and miss. Excuse me. There's some good stuff later, though. Don't worry. I know because I'm God. Now these are the generations of Esau, who is Edom. Esau took his wives of the daughters of Canaan, which doesn't seem right. I seem to remember the opposite of that, but I guess this book's hard to interpret sometimes. Ada, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite, and Aholibamah, the daughter of Anna, the daughter of Zibeon, the Hivite, and Bashemath, Ishmael's daughter, sister of Nebahoth. And Ada bare Esau, Eliphaz, and... Oh, this is so terrible. Sure, skip. These are the sons of Esau, which were born unto him in the land of Canaan. And Esau took his wives and his sons and his daughters and all the persons of his house and his cattle and all his beasts and all his substance. Just say everything. Esau took everything, him and everything. That's it. Which he had gotten in the land of Canaan, and went into the country from the face of his brother Jacob. For their riches were more than that they might dwell together, and the land wherein they were strangers could not bear them because of their cattle. Thus dwelt Esau in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom again. And these are the generations of Esau, the father of the Edomites in Mount Seir. These are the names of Esau's son, Eliphaz, son of Adah, the wife of Esau, Reuel, son of Bashemoth, the wife of Esau. What a terrible book this is. Gadam, Sepho, Timnah, concubine. Excuse me. Zelpho, sons of Ath, wife. Some more sons. Sons of Reuel. Sons of Ahalbamoth. Dukes. He's got some dukes in his family. Duke Timon, Duke Omar, Duke Zepho, Duke... Skip. Sorry about this. This is incredibly boring. The next chapter is good, I promise. This is just sort of enumerating Esau's family, and it's just a bunch of boring stuff. Skip. Okay, Joab died. Let's see. Samla died. All right, nothing happened. He had a million sons, and their sons had sons. And it's really getting really annoying. Other sons had sons, and that's the end of it. On to chapter 37. Oh, this is... Okay, now this is going to start to get a little recognizable. I don't know if any of you are fans of the musical Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dream Suit by Andrew Lloyd Webber. I think it kind of sucks, but that's where this is from. No. This is where that is from. Well, it would be funny if it was the other way around, though. God was writing this, and he's like, man, I love that, that catchy musical I heard about Joseph and Amazing Technicolor. I think I'm going to write a story in here about that. Chapter 37, verse 1, and Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. So they're picking on Joseph, his brethren. He doesn't really get along with them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. And Joseph said, okay, it's kind of tacky looking, but all right. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. And Joseph dreamed a dream. He dreamed a dream. This is the chapter about musicals. And he told it his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said to them, Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves into the field, and lo, my sheaf arose, and also stood upright. Ooh, I hate when my sheaf arises and stands upright and everybody sees it. And behold, your sheaves stood round about, made obeisance to my sheaf. His brethren said unto him, Shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. Okay, so once again, this couldn't just be a stupid dream. What does it matter if his sheaf was the master in his dream? His sheaf was the master of other people's sheaves. What even are sheaves anyway? Who cares? That has not. It's a dream. Just shut up and get back to whatever you're doing. I don't know why they always have to tell these dreams or think they mean something. And then telling these people he's going to rule over them because his sheaf ruled over their sheaves. And he dreamed yet another dream and told it his brethren and said, Behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. 11 stars. Yeah, that's about right. That's about all of them. Ah, plus or minus, you know. 11. Plus or minus. You know, billions of billions. I guess back then they hadn't invented that breakthrough astronomical technology called looking for more than 3 seconds. I know these were simpler times, but 11 stars, huh? 11 stars. Sun and the moon and all 11 stars made obeisance to him. Well, also, one thing's for sure. Jacob didn't favor Joseph for his superior intellect. Look, Joseph, my bro, can't you tell that they didn't take too kindly to the first dream you told them about where you were going to rule their worlds? I think I would get a bit annoyed at that, too, especially coming from someone like Joseph, who's clearly some kind of dimwit, if this, you know, semi-mentally challenged person kept telling me about these dreams where he's going to rule over me. Yeah, I think I'd get a little annoyed. But, Joseph, after you told him the first dream, and they're like, you're an a-hole, what did you think they were going to say the second time? Like, wow, you've had two dreams where you ruled over them? Okay, you must be right. What are you trying to gain out of this? Idiot. And he told it his father and to his brethren, and his father rebuked him. See, even his father's rebuking him for this, and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying. And his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said unto Joseph, do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said to him, here am I. And he said to him, go, I pray thee, and see whether it will be well with thy brethren, and well with the flocks, and bring me the word again. So he sent him out of the vale in Hebron, and he came to Shechem. So Joseph tells Jacob about his dream and stuff, and everybody's jealous and all that, so Jacob tells Joseph, well, go, your brethren are out feeding the flock, so go check them out and see how they feel about you. And, you know, maybe they'll let me know how it goes, he says. And so while Joseph is on his way, a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, what seekest thou? And he said, I seek my brethren. Tell me, I pray thee, where they feed their flocks. And the man said, they are departed from hence, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. And Joseph went after his brethren, and found them in Dothan. And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. And they said one to another, behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him, and cast him into some pit. And we will say, some evil beast hath devoured him. And we shall see what will become of his dreams. So there, his brethren are planning to kill him and say that a beast devoured him. Again, I'm trying to keep up this recapping for you guys. And Reuben, and Reuben heard it and delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. And Reuben said unto them, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hands, to deliver him to his father again. And it came to pass, when Joseph was unto his brethren, that they stripped Joseph out of his coat of many colors that was on him, and they took him and cast him into a pit. And the pit was empty, there was no water in it. And they sat down to eat bread, and they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels, bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, and going to carry it down to Egypt. And Judah said unto his brethren, what profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother in our flesh. And his brethren were content. Well, that's nice. Instead of killing him, they're going to sell him into slavery. That's good. That's nice of him. Brotherly love. Then there passed by Midianites merchantmen, And they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit, and they sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph into Egypt. And Reuben returned unto the pit, and behold, Joseph was not in the pit, and he rent his clothes. And he returned unto his brethren, and said, The child is not, and I, whither shall I go? And they took Joseph's coat, and killed a kid of the goats, and dipped the coat in the blood. And they sent the coat of many colors, and they brought it to their father, and said, This we have found. Know now whether it be thy son's coat or no. And he knew it, and said, It is my son's coat. I recognize all the stupid colors I put in it. An evil beast hath devoured him. And that's the only thing that could happen. Joseph is without a doubt rent in pieces. And Jacob rent his clothes and put sackcloth upon his loins. Sackcloth. And mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, For I will go down unto the grave of my son mourning. Thus his father wept for him. And the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of the Pharaoh's, and captain of the guard. All right, so that's the end of that. So Joseph and the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat get sold by his brethren. And his brethren smear his coat with blood and say, he died, was killed by a beast. And so that's pretty much the end of that, actually. Next chapter's a little more exciting. It's been a little bit of a dud so far, but next one's even better than this one. On to chapter 38. All right, this chapter gets freaking awesome. It's so obvious that throughout this whole book so far, people are referring to God, but they're talking about different things. I just know it. They don't all mean the same one God. Because God is just erratic. Sometimes he's jealous. Sometimes he's a jerk. Sometimes all these different things. And this is a good example of this. So just wait for this one. It's pretty good. It's been worth all the drudgery thus far in this podcast. And it came to pass at that time that Judah went down from his brethren and turned into a certain Adullamite, whose name was Hirah. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite, whose name was Shua, and he took her and went in unto her. Took her. That's all they do. And she conceived and bare a son, and he called his name Ur. I like it. What should we name him? That's good. I like that. I love it. Okay. E-R, that's all it is. And she conceived again. And I think they made a show about Ur. Stupid. And she conceived again and bare a son, and she called his name Onan. And she conceived and bare a son, and called his name Shelah. And he was at Chezib when she bare him. And Judah took a wife for his firstborn, whose name was Tamar. And Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord slew him. So not really much of an explanation there. So was apparently wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord just killed him. This was like, ugh, you're wicked. Dead. And it's funny, because there have been a crapload of really wicked people in this book so far that God just sort of ignored, was like, yeah, whatever. I don't care. The sons of Jacob murdered people, innocent people. For nothing. People who are in love and got murdered. I'm going to keep harping on this for a while, but don't worry. There'll be worse things that'll happen that I can start talking about. But no, they're fine. Don't kill them. But he was wicked. So that's it. There's no explanation. He must have done something really horrible, because all kinds of people have gotten away with horrible crap in this book. Nope, just Lord slew him. Mm-hmm. Anyway, moving on. I'm sure it'll get better. And Judah said unto Onan, Go in unto thy brother's wife, and marry her, and raise up seed to thy brother. And Onan knew that the seed should not be his. And it came to pass, when he went in unto his brother's wife, that he spilled it on the ground, lest that he should give seed to his brother. So how exactly would the seed be Ur's? It's kind of a miscalculation on Onan's part. Onan didn't want to have sex with his brother's wife, because somehow that would be Ur's baby. No, that's not really how that works. Ur didn't have any kids by Ur. I don't even think they got married. But no, somehow that would be Ur's seed. That's kind of weird. And the thing, I really didn't make this up. The word is, the language is, he spilled it on the ground when he went in unto his brother's wife. And the thing which he did displeased the Lord, wherefore he slew him also. So God kills him. again, a little harsh, I think, with all the stuff we've seen. All of a sudden, this so-called God is just murdering people on the spot for almost nothing. People wonder why I don't believe in this stupid book. It's ridiculous. It's stupid. It's a dumb, dumb book. We got, surely murdering an entire people like the sons of Jacob did was a little bit worse than pulling out after sex one time. Also, why exactly do you not like this, God? Most of our sperm just die anyway. But if you don't like if we pull out, so not creating a human is apparently a really terrible thing. Therefore, you murder Onan. So does the two wrongs? He never heard the two wrongs don't make a right thing. So, oh, I pulled out. Sorry, I'm gonna kill you for that because that makes it better. And you know, none of these things has the Lord spelled out ahead of time. Wouldn't Onan just been like, oh crap, dude, I didn't know. I didn't know you didn't want me to do that. You haven't told us anything. You told us not kill people. You didn't say don't spill your semen when you have sex with your brother's wife. I'm pretty sure I would have remembered that one if you said it. So can't you just give me another chance? All right, I'll do it. Whatever. Don't kill me. You know, don't you think you could have said that? Nope, God just kills him without saying it. Oh, you should have known I wouldn't like you to do that. Stupid, 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 stupid. And God's violating his only commandment. God said he shouldn't kill people. That's the only thing he's bothered to say. But God's killing people for spilling semen. So dumb. Then said Judah to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, remain a widow at thy father's house till Shelah my son be grown. For he said, lest peradventure he die also, as his brethren did. Yeah, no, I'd be worried too. He's lost two freaking sons for nothing. I'd be worried about the third one to die too. You know, why doesn't Judah question this in the least bit? He hasn't even said anything. Judah hasn't been like, God, all right, I'm down two sons, and to be honest, between them, I don't really see that they did anything that bad. So could we just, I know you're God and everything, but could we just cool it or just give me a warning, you know, and I'll just slap them. I'll just tell them to stop whatever they're doing. You don't have to kill them. I mean, lots of other people you could be killing in this world. Spilling semen? And in the process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died. And Judah was comforted, and went up unto his sheep shearers to Timnath, he and his friend Hira the Adullamite. And it was old Tamar, saying, behold, thy father-in-law goeth up to Timnath to shear his sheep. So Tamar is the wife that was going to marry all these sons that have died. And she hears that Judah has gone off to shear his sheep. And she put her widow's garments off from her and covered her with a veil and wrapped herself and sat in an open place, which is by the way to Timnath, for she saw that Shelah was grown, and she was not given unto him to wife. So I think she's worried that she hasn't been given unto Shelah for wife, and I think she just wants a kid, which will explain what's about to happen. When Judah saw her, he thought her to be an harlot, because she had covered her face. Well, yeah, anyone who covers their face is probably a prostitute. And he turned unto her, by the way, and said, go to, I pray thee. Let me come into thee. Let me come in unto thee. For he knew not that she was his daughter-in-law. Yeah, he just thought she was some prostitute that, of course, it was okay to have sex with. And she said, what wilt thou give me that thou mayest come in unto me? And he said, I will send thee a kid from the flock. And she said, wilt thou give me a pledge till thou send it? And he said, what pledge shall I give thee? And she said, thy signet and thy bracelets and thy staff that is in thine hand. And he gave it to her and came in unto her, and she conceived by him. So Judah, whose wife just died, decides to have sex with what he thinks is a prostitute for a goat. And she arose and went away, and laid by her veil from her, and put the garments of her widowhood. And Judah sent the kid by the hand of his friend the Adullamite to receive his pledge from the woman's hand, but he found her not. So their agreement was that he'd give her a kid, not a baby kid, but a kid. And until that time, she's like, well, I'm going to keep something as a pledge until you give me the kid. So he sort of tricked him into giving her his signet and his staff and his, you know, things that would identify him. So Judah's trying to send the kid and find the prostitute to send the kid to so he can get his stuff back. But the person, his friend, can't find her. Then he asked the men of that place, saying, "Where is the harlot that was openly by the wayside?" And they said, "There was no harlot in this place." And he returned to Judah and said, "I cannot find her." And also the men of the place said, "There was no harlot in this place." And Judah said, "Let her take it to her, lest we be shamed. Behold, I sent this kid, and thou hast not found her." And it came to pass about 3 months later that it was told Judah, saying, "Tamar, thy daughter-in-law, hath played the harlot. And also, behold, she is with child by whoredom." And Judah said, "Bring her forth and let her be burnt." Again, just like God didn't instruct. It was so Judah finds out that Tamar, his daughter-in-law, not even his daughter, his daughter-in-law, played the harlot. And I don't think that, you'll see with what happens, I don't think he knew that it was the whore that he did. So he hears this and he says, "Oh, bring her forth, let's burn her." Burn her? Remember, in the process of this whoring, it was Judah who initiated the sexual transaction in the first place. There is no morality in this book. Again, the people who are the very sons of God. And burn her, really. You're going to burn... imagine burning a person. It's the most terrible thing I can think of, and it's in this stupid, supposedly really holy book. It's just horrible. I can't get over how bad this book is. It's terrible. And when she was brought forth, she sent to her father-in-law, saying, "By the man whose these are, am I with child?" And she said, "Discern, I pray thee, whose are these, the signet, the bracelets, and the staff?" And Judah acknowledged them and said, "She hath been more righteous than I, because that I gave her not to Shelah, my son." And he knew her again no more. And it came to pass in the so... She's about to be burned, and she said, "Well, guess who I had sex with?" And she presents the stuff that she got from Judah. And Judah's like, "Oh, you're right." And that's it. So it's a question of burning a human life. You're going to burn. Horrible, horrible thing to do. But then she points out that you were the one who had sex with her, and it's like, "Oh, nah, you got me." Like it was the... I can't exactly put words to how stupid that is, but don't you see how horrible that is? Like, it was just something he was going to do. It was like a whim almost. And then, you know, once he found this new piece of information, he's like, "Oh, you're right. You got me." So that makes me wonder, like, what else he could possibly do when this kind of thing didn't happen. Like, what else is he capable of? Horrible stuff. And it came to pass in the time of her travail that, behold, twins were in her womb. And it came to pass when she travailed that the one put out his hand, and the midwife took and bound upon his hand a scarlet thread, saying, "This came out first." And it came to pass, as he drew back his hand, that, behold, his brother came out. And she said, "How hast thou broken forth? This breach be upon thee." Therefore his name was called Pharez. And afterward came out his brother that had the scarlet thread upon his hand, and his name was called Zerah. Wow, that sounded really uncomfortable for the mother. So there are twins. They're like wrestling to get out of her vagina. One baby puts his arm out. The midwife ties a thread around his arm because it's really important who's the oldest back then. And then somehow the other baby like jukes him and then is out. He's like, "Aha, gotcha, I'm out." How did that happen? I'm no expert on this, but that seems kind of impossible. Like there's somebody's on. It's a pretty funny visual, funny and kind of disgusting, but one of the son's arm comes out and the midwife ties a string around it. And then it comes back, retracts, it goes back in, and the other one comes out. it's funny. Well, that's the end of 38. So we're shown some more horrible, horrible morality, terrible practices in this book. It's awful. These people are supposedly... That's why I just really think... I'm coming to the conclusion more and more. It'll be hard to get any religious people to really listen to all this criticism. They just find ways of justifying it. But I think the main thing I'm going to start to emphasize is how this Old Testament God... It's not just that the law was superseded by the New Testament. It's that this isn't the God that people worship, that Christians worship. This is not the right God. This book is wrong. It's about something else. It's about some other imaginary God. Well, they're all imaginary, but to them, I mean, to the Christians, I think they should just admit that this is about some totally imaginary God that's not real. They just need to do that. That would be a step in the right direction, but they could never do that because that would prove that they were wrong about so much all these years. So that's the end of the podcast for today. Another pretty short one. But thanks for listening, and I'll see you guys tomorrow.